Brave New World.
Hello and welcome to Brave New World programme. My name's John Harrison and welcome to the second part of a programme about the very important process that's happening the world over, that is going cashless. In this second programme, we talk about the effect of going cashless on security, the role of banks, governments and consumers' privacy. I'm joined by Professor Steve Keane from the School of Social and Behavioural Sciences at the University of Kingston in the UK.
We're still a monetary system. Well, capitalism has and always will be a monetary system. And the question of what the form of that money take. Most people don't realise that in the UK, for example, the form that money took for most of the period from William the Conqueror forward was tally sticks, pieces of wood that had been cut in half with marks either side, one for the debtor and one for the creditor. And then, so that was the transaction. It was still physical. You still had a stock you could hang on to, and a
right.
cup, which was the, you know, so that, those elements were, you know, they've become part of our language without us even being aware where the language itself came from now. So, but that physical is still a monetary system.
Yeah.
So we have to have something, and that's why I'm thinking Elon Musk has to think about this. So at some stage, if he actually wants to colonize Mars, he's going to need a monetary system up there that makes sense for that society.
Yeah. Now, I want to talk to you, please, a little bit about banks, because, I mean, banks, when I was growing up, they used to play is where you stored physical money and gold, and they're kind of like, they always had, you know, big heavy doors outside them, and you know, and direct links to police stations and so on, you know. But now the proportion of physical money in comparison to the wealth of a person or a country, it seems to be really small. Now, does that mean that the security aspect of banking is going to change?
It probably will. I mean, the main security they need to have now is electronic.
Yeah.
I've forgotten who it was, a particular American criminal was asked, why do you rob banks? He says, because that's where the money is. Well,
right.
These days the money is digital, so the robbery attempts tend to be more digital than now physical. I can't remember the last time I heard of somebody breaking into a bank to take physical money out of it, or gold and so on. It still happens, obviously, but it's far less than it used to be. But that is still, I mean, we still don't understand that part, because in fact, reserves that banks held were in case the public got worried about the monetary system or about a particular bank and wanted to take their cash out. That's where the reserve ratio that banks still have around the world still comes from. And it's all related to household rather than commercial deposits. So we need some form of security, and that's the real problem. That in many ways, the computer systems we developed never had security built in as a fundamental element of them, which is why you can have break-ins and fraud still occurring, because our systems were set up in some semi-trusting fashion rather than a sceptical fashion. I've just actually got an email from one of the organisations I use telling me that some of my data has been compromised and they're watching out for scams and so on.
Yeah.
That is something which we've inherited that because we didn't start with a secure networking and computer system in the first place.
Yeah.
And that, again, worries me about trying to build this retrospectively with a digital cash system.
I got a letter from a bank in the UK which stored a very small amount of gold that I used to own, and they told me that I couldn't access that gold because I hadn't yet provided the information stipulated by this new EU rule and so on, and I provided the information, there were some problems with it, and a few weeks went by and I felt really insecure. You know, I mean, I thought that gold is actually supposed to provide security, you know. I mean, it's sort of something that's different from the rest of it, you know. But anyway, that's beside the point. Now, going back to cashless financial transactions, I mean, they're not free, are they? Banks charge a commission on every payment. And does that mean that going cashless actually strengthens the banker's hands and, in a way, promotes banks to a hitherto unachieved power over commerce and even politics?
I think that's very true. And Dwight D. Eisenhower coined the term the military-industrial complex to talk about the danger of it. Now, that's still obviously real, but I think the main one we face these days is what I call the politico-financial complex. And the power of banks partly stems out of us not understanding how banks actually operate, and therefore giving bankers the sort of masters of the universe stance.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, most bankers don't know how they actually create money. It's basically double entry bookkeeping. Anyone can do it. It's not complicated, it's not magic, and it shouldn't be given the level of power and control that it has over society.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd rather see us instituting something like the Japanese Postal Bank Service for transactions. I'm happy to have banks having a role in money creation and credit and extending money to creating money for commercial ventures and so on, and taking a risk themselves in doing so. But this sort of stuff should really be part of a publicly owned infrastructure for transactional-based commerce, which we don't want to have affected by the ups and downs of credit.
Yeah, and I mean, it means that we're all paying for using money, which we didn't have to do before. We just had money, we just spent it. And now we're paying another tax to some bank somewhere else in the world, perhaps.
Yeah, I'd rather be paying a maintenance fee to a public institution.
Right, right. And what does cashless mean in terms of governmental powers? I mean, if all of our wealth is visible to us on a computer screen, doesn't that mean that it's also visible by perhaps a government agency? And not only government agencies, tax avoidance, for example, would be more difficult to do. Maybe that's a good thing. But doesn't that also mean the disintegration of some basic human rights, such as the ability of being able to spend one's money on what one wants without a record being made of exactly when and where that money is spent?
Yeah, we've surrendered any concept of privacy.
Yeah.
Once we go totally digital.
Yeah.
And again, because we've never built the systems up in the first instance to give you that privacy or security, I'd be extremely worried about backdoors being built in, CIA having access, MI5 as well, for that matter, maybe even the KGB. So all these things mean you are exposed to public control and power structures in a way that you aren't when you can actually carry this stuff with you.
Yeah.
Then you're only exposed to bandits and robbers.
Yeah, and I mean, and also, I mean, currencies, they have a kind of ideological force, don't they? I mean, the US dollar has a different ideological status in comparison to the Chinese yuan. Could you say that we've sort of grown up in the world of dollar domination of the world? And does whoever control the most powerful online currency also control the universe?
The financial sector of America has benefited very much out of being the global reserve currency.
Yeah.
Of course, that's what screwed the manufacturing sector. And I think this is one of the many ways in which the current financial system we have is decrepit and needs some sort of replacement. But whether going cashless is going to strengthen or weaken that system, I'm more inclined to say it'll give more power to that system than it takes away. And certainly, once you have these systems, so it's particularly if you're trying to control tax avoidance with it, tax avoidance is a national, it's a pastime of the wealthy.
Right.
And you've got a lot of money to pay for means to avoid that control, then that will also turn up. So that if you imagine the stacking of various computer systems trying to stop other computer systems do what they are designed to do, we're going to have one hell of a mess there.
Yeah.
And the potential for that failing is enormous. I can't use the actual expression, but if you've been in the computer trade for as long as I have been at various times, there's an expression which says to err is human, to really F up takes a computer. Now, to really F up beyond belief takes a network of computers with interacting, competing, and hostile software systems.
Yeah.
And that, to me, is what is involved in digital cash.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Let's take a short break here.
Brave New World.
Welcome back to Brave New World programme. Today I'm talking to Professor Steve Keane about going cashless. On the security front, we're all using or deepening our reliance on a system like Visa, just Visa for example. Now Visa can be instructed not to operate in another country. Let's say a country like Russia. So Russia develops its own online payment system, which it's already done. But then other countries at a time of international tension, great international tension, may decide to block that or not to use it. Now, does that mean, in fact, that digitalized cashless money is more able to be controlled and to be weaponized than traditional currencies?
I think it does. It's possible to say you can't exchange that physical currency at a Travelex bureau, of course. That's much more limited than what we see at the moment. If you were told you couldn't use your Russian money to go shopping in America when you're a Russian in America, that's panic stations. And that level of control, again, is something which I expect to be abused.
Yeah, yeah. But in general, then, your feeling is that this is inevitable, but we should do this in a safer way and perhaps keep cash going as a reserve. Is that what you feel?
That's pretty much my feeling. And I also would like to see us actually reform the foundations of the monetary system globally too, because the whole fact that it's based on the American dollar was a disaster done by Harry Dexter White, the American representative of the Bretton Woods Agreement, who overruled Keynes, and with the dominant position, the Americans forced the use of the American dollar rather than the artificial currency that Keynes wanted to use called the the Bancor. And if we had the Bancor, we'd have a distributed international system to enable these transactions to be to evolve towards a cashless world in the future. Instead, we've got to fix up this totally rickety system we currently have with all its abuses, and we're building more potential for abuse on top of it. So count me down as a skeptic. I know it's going to happen, but I hope it happens slowly, and I hope we build as many safeguards as possible into it rather than assuming it's going to work nice and smoothly all the way through.
Yeah, and it can't be stopped, can it? I mean, it's a one-way journey. We're on this journey now, and it can't be stopped, basically.
Unless it breaks down.
Unless it breaks down. Okay.
And that's why the Indian situation might come back at a global level.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Well, Stephen, we've got a couple of minutes left. Is there anything else you can say, please, about something I haven't asked you? And I'll put the question in.
Well, I think the main thing I worry about is that we have a capitalist system which is prone to financial instability.
Yeah.
This is the vision that Hyman Minsky had, which was proven empirically correct by the 2008 crisis that the mainstream thought would never happen.
Yeah.
And bang, it hits them in the face. Unless we realize that potential for instability and the need to build in counters to it, then any system is going to have flaws, whether it's cashless or based on larger bucket loads of money being carried around by people.
Yeah.
So we have to be aware of the fundamental instability of the capitalist economy. Not that that's necessarily a bad thing. Instability is part of the source of creativity. We have to make sure that it can't lead to breakdown.
Yeah.
What worries me is this is happening at a time when the mainstream economics still dominates how we think about financial systems, still believes that capitalism is inherently stable, and people who believe something is stable and is actually unstable are always going to be in for a rude shock at some time in the future.
So progress with caution.
Yes, indeed.
Okay. Thank you very much indeed. Fascinating talking to you, Steve, as always. Stephen Keane from the School of Social and Behavioural Sciences at the University of Kingston in the UK. And thank you very much, listeners, for being with us today. I hope it's been interesting for you. It certainly has been for me. Please tune in again next week. Goodbye.